to this festive edition of Forever Bristol City podcast. We're going into the Christmas period, at least with the benefit of another home win, two wins in a row for the first time since February, I believe. The final score at Ashton Gate, it finished City 3, Hull 2. I'm delighted to be joined by Neil, who sat with me here, for those of you that are watching on YouTube, and Ian. And a welcome new addition to our panel is Ben Bond. Morning, chaps. Are we feeling Christmassy? Are we all shopped out and ready to start feasting and drinking? You, Neil, everybody, what do we think? Neil?
Well, it feels like a Sunday today. I have to admit, playing on a Friday night, it feels like a Sunday, but it's Saturday and I've got the whole of Saturday now to sort of go out. But yeah, I'm still in a bit of shock on last night, actually.
There you go. Yeah, Ian, are you all ready for Christmas? You've got a bit of good personal news as well. Tell us that. You just shared that with me.
I got another grandchild on the way. So, yeah, it did. Yeah, great news. Great result last night. Great Christmas. You know, if you look at our... We've now got a 75% points take at home under Liam Manning and a 75% win rate. Now, the away form is not so grand, but after I said I'd make a judgment or a summary judgment after 10 games, and we've now got two really difficult away games coming up. So let's see how well we do in those, and then we can make a sensible judgment of his first 10 games.
Yeah, we're nearly there. And Ben, welcome to Forever Bristol City podcast. You ready for Christmas? And let's begin with your walkaway thoughts from Ashton Gate last night.
Yeah. So morning, David and team. Yeah, not really. Like has been said, I'm looking forward to having a whole day on today to get stuff ready. Walking away yesterday felt like we won something really quite significant. There's lots of good atmosphere walking out of the South Stand, walking around the ground, and actually, I wasn't quite sure what the celebrations were all about, other than the fact that we've managed to get that elusive back-to-back for the first time in 11 months. So it was positive. I wouldn't call it a mauling, but I call it a step in the right direction.
We're trying to be positive. Neil, your actual thoughts walking away. You shared what Ben just said. There seemed to be a bit of a vibe about the place.
Well, yeah. The concourse in the Dolmen was really buzzing. Mm-hmm. I know there was an atmosphere around the club yesterday. I thought beforehand there was people were there Friday night. Kind of works Friday night doesn't it?
You know?
And then sort of freeing up. So there's always the night games and stuff. But after, I think it was the fact when you come back, and it's been a long time, isn't it? But somebody will know, but when was the last time we actually had a comeback win like that?
A comeback win. I'm trying to think.
A home win. Yeah. It's a comeback win. I'm struggling. Normally we get ahead or we get, you know, two ahead, then we get back. Or there's a bit of a ding-dong and stuff. But to 75 minutes, I did not see it. I'll put my hand up. I did not see it way back into that game pre-substitutes. I'm looking over at the bench, looking out, thinking, well, is he going to change? When's he going to change? Because we're just pedestrian in the way that we're passing the ball around. We're not creating anything. And I thought, oh, please don't, you know, be positive, be on, to use his word, on the front foot, go down 3-1 rather than 2-1 by at least trying to chase the game, get back in the game. But, they're keepers.
Oh, we'll talk about those later when we get into the detail. Ian, I think it was the same starting lineup. So were you sort of pleased with that? Do you think, you know, that was the right thing to do, looking for a second successive home win or a second successive win for the first time since February, but no complaints about the lineup. And it was a full bench this time as well, wasn't it?
First time in 39 games we've won back-to-back league games. So I wasn't surprised. Well, I was surprised because there was a rumour, Liam Manning said in his press conference they'd had a sickness bug in the camp during the week. So I expected to see one, possibly two players miss out or be on the bench that started. So that's good. But with four games in the next 8 days, we're going to need to utilise the squad. And I was really pleased with Joe Williams when he came on last night because he was more mobile than Matty James. I think Matty was knackered by that time. And he changed the game in terms of getting on to winning the first and second balls. So that was a really effective substitution. I thought Mometi might have gone off when Sam Bell came on, but Manning rates him. He was going to sign him when he was at Oxford, or try to. And at long last, he came in, and he must have tried that manoeuvre, cutting in and shooting on his right foot 50 times. He's been playing for us. That's the first time he's come off. So nice to see the kid get a goal. After that, he started to play better. It's all about confidence. There's no such thing as an unconfident footballer that's playing well. I was pleased with that. And I think the way that we're going to play now, it infuriates me sometimes when we're shoving it around the back, or we're in a reasonable position and the ball goes backwards. That, I'm afraid, I'll call it the modern way. But we need to be better at getting it forward quick. I don't mean lump it, but I'm talking about going up through the thirds quicker. And that's there are lots of things we can improve on. And that's what pleased me last night. We beat a good side, 3-2, after being behind.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so much we can do better from last night. And hopefully most of those players will come along on the journey. And hopefully we get that journey commencing. So I'm more hopeful than I've been for a long time.
Yeah. Ben, what did you think of the starting lineup and the shape of the side? It is picking itself at the moment, and there was some good, it was a good team performance, and there was some good individual performances, notably Jason Knight, as Josh Jones has said here on the text feed, the league's best player. Don't know about that, but he's certainly one of the most energetic. But what were your thoughts on the shape of the side? And Hull, I mean, they're not a bad team, although they are susceptible at the back, aren't they?
Yeah, I think the side sadly picks itself. We know about the squad and our challenges around available players. I think that the shape of the side, I can't really pick the shape of the team start of the half. I take my son along, who's 17. He's that generation of a FIFA generation of, you know, formations all over the place. And he's trying to pick out the three and the five and the pivots and the blocks. And I look at the shape of the team. I look at the lads who are committed. I think that the we've got reasonable energy in midfield from players who are at it. And Gardner Hickman is another example. But Jason Knight's legs are great from that point of view. So I think from his point of view, we are doing what we can with the squad that we've got. And I was pleased with that yesterday. But I don't think, as we said on this pod, you said many times, we're not the finished article yet.
No. And Ian's often commented about crosses. And he said then about performance in the final third of the field. Yeah. What do you think we can do to improve crosses? Is Sykes sort of, you know, his energy makes up for the lack of crosses? What do you think?
Is that to me, David?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I just got a couple of no sound messages come up on the feed. Yeah. If you've seen that as well. I think our setup, and we'll talk about it a bit later with the Manchester United game 6 years ago, but we're not playing particularly with lots of width from those forward players. So actually they're cutting inside quite a lot. We saw it last night. So yeah, Sykes looks dangerous. I've been surprised that Sykes has been removed when he's been removed in previous games, because, you know, him on the sort of top right is one of our most attacking and threatening crosses in of the ball. And I think their left-hand side yesterday got quite a torrid time as well from us during the game. And I think that was good to keep Sykesy over there. But I think, on this pod, you said it many times, you know, we have to put in really good quality crosses to fit the players we've got. We've not got the knockdowns available. So you've got to really hit a 9 out of 10 cross to be threatening in any sense, whereas we haven't really got the get-out ball that we need. And again, we'll talk about it a bit later on. But, you know, we are relying on very good quality crosses to turn over chances that we've not had in the past.
Okay, let's get into the action then. And we started brightly, and one particularly good move that I noticed, which started with Taylor Gardner-Hickman, who's got a hell of a lot of energy, really good player, should be signed if he's available for 1.4 million. That looks a good signing, straight up. Taylor Gardner-Hickman, he passed it to Mometi to Pring, cross. Knight coming in on the edge of the box, as he's done couple of times already this season, bringing a save from the keeper. But then we took the lead, the goal, 25 minutes from the penalty spot. Neil, you first. We'd had a couple of half calls for handball. Mm. It was almost like they were trying to play basketball. But then how did you see the goal and Tommy's penalty? You know, that's it's like buses, you know, none, and then two penalties come along.
Three
since Manning's been in charge, but two in successive games. But take us through the goal as you saw it.
Well, I think, as you say, there was about two shouts beforehand for handball. And I, like probably most people, are completely confused what is handball and not handball nowadays. Mm. It seems to change on a match-by-match basis. But from the Dolman, from the E32, I thought Greaves was unlucky. You know, I thought he's got up and he said it. I've seen it back. And actually, it's a clear penalty.
It is, yeah.
Because
from behind the goal.
From behind, oh, I'm trying to show it on YouTube here. But from behind the goal, it looks like his hand is quite close to his head. Whereas actually, you see it on the thing and his hand's stuck out. So clear penalty for me. He's very calm and composed, Conway, on penalties.
Yeah.
I like him on penalties.
Yeah, but you're not liking him as a player at the moment.
Unfortunately, he's not doing much else other than the penalties. You know, you look at it and you go, he's got four goals in the last seven games. Oh, you know, Tommy's back. Three of them are penalties. Outside of that, I can't see him leading that line
his position is under threat.
I think Wells is more of a Manning player in that situation.
Well, let's see. Ian, take us through your views of the penalty, clearly. And Tommy, very accomplished from the spot. Yeah, sent the keeper the wrong way, same position as he did against Sunderland. And Tommy in general, because I was with somebody yesterday who said, you know, he doesn't look on it. Even when he came over to celebrate the goal, it was sort of, you know, he was enthused about it, but it just looks about a yard slow. What did you think on all those three situations there, Ian, what I've just mentioned?
Stonewall penalty. Whether he tried to hit the ball or not, his hand was up here or out there. So the ball hits his hand. Well, if your hand's in what they term an unnatural position, it's a penalty. So it was a Stonewall penalty. In the system we play, Tommy gets isolated and he's not a strong physical back to goal, 6'3", 14 stone centre forward.
No.
He's just not that player. Neither's Naki. And I still get frustrated when we go long to those players because Sunderland in the second half against us, although they didn't score, they showed exactly how you play with a false nine or a small centre forward. They had a guy about 5'8".
Pritchard, you're talking about last week. Yeah.
Pritchard switching in and out of a false nine position with a couple of the other lads they had. So that's something that does frustrate me. And I think, as I said before, I've been campaigning for us going two up front. There's plenty of formations that allow you to do it. Perhaps we will when we've got a few players back from injury and the squad is and the squad's got more depth. In terms of Tommy, I think he's doing as well as he can with the service he gets. We've already spoke about the crosses. We had more than double the number of crosses that Hull did last night, but a lot of them were useless. So we've got to get that right. And that's what I said. There are lots of things we can do better. Simple things, passing, first touch, crossing, movement. All those things, we can be 30% better, 40% better even on.
Yeah.
And we won. So it just goes to show. I mean, I think Matthew Seward's put on air, well done to Nigel for creating a never say die attitude. And that's a good point. We've got a team of people that I think the Ashton Gate crowd over the years, they'll forgive you for most things. One thing they won't forgive you for is not trying. And that's why sometimes they get more excited about a tackle down there than they will about a goal.
I totally agree. And looking back over 50 years, I agree. We like something to get stuck in, which is why Glenn Humphreys and players like that were so popular. They weren't the best footballers.
Well, Tommy Dott was another one who I remember starting a game against Swindon and they had a guy called Tommy Mooney playing up front. He was a big, tough guy. And Tommy smashed him in the first 2 minutes. Fair tackle. And he just disappeared from the game. And that then, it was a completely, I don't know if it was one-way traffic. I know we won the game, but we were so much better than that. It was unbelievable. But that was how you can set the ceiling a game of saying, right, we're for business. And we've had some people who will do that. And, you know, your Dave Martins and Glenn Humphreys and little Steve Galliers and all Galliers, the rest of it. So, you know, so, but I think providing we're trying and providing another thing, we're trying to win. We're not just sitting in and hoping something happens. We're trying to make something happen. Even if we're playing deep and attacking on the break, because we're still probably better set up to do that than play Manning ball because he hasn't had a window yet. And he hasn't been able to bring anybody in. And he still needs longer on the grass with the players. But I'm happy enough with Tommy. I think him in this system, you could alternate, especially around this period, you could alternate him in Naki. I don't think it'd make a ton of difference.
No. Ben, I think everybody, handball, definitely. Tommy, the nominated spot kicker. Again, we do this thing that he doesn't hold the ball, so he's not going to get intimidated by the opposition. He finished it well, but there are rumblings of he's not on his game. Do you think he's missing Alex Scott because they flatmated together, or do you think he's got, he's got other ideas, things on his mind? You know, is he not adapting in the way that maybe some of the other players are?
I'd say that he is under quite a lot of pressure because we are putting a lot on his shoulders. So, you know, he's the gem in our team. He's the next one to go after the other big exits in the team. I think that may be getting to him. I mean, I can't speculate on what he's thinking, what he's doing. What I can say is when he plays football, he looks quieter than he has been, whether that's the formation, whether that's how he's being coached. You know, I'm also interested in how we're adding value to players over time. So what is he doing on the grass in the week? You know, what is he working on with the setup in training? How are we developing him? How did Nigel's team do it with him? How is Liam's team going to do it with him to make him a better player? Because ultimately, we all know that our better players tend to leave us at some point because we're not yet good enough to sustain really top-flight players. And until we are always going to be in a situation of players leaving us. So, great asset, you know.
I think you make a good point there about who's going to help Tommy learn, because I think a big influencer in helping Tommy become the player that he was, or he started last season, right, was Naki Wells, when he and Naki were playing a lot in the second level football, and Naki's got experience and, you know, probably added a lot of value from that sort of teaching perspective. But let's get on further into the action. As you'd expect, Neil Hull came back, and that Delap, is he son of the long throw expert?
Son of Rory.
Who was it who put that great tackle in that robbed him? Was that Zach or was that Dickie? There was one
Zach.
Run where
it was Zach Viner.
Right.
That was Connolly down the centre.
Was it?
That was Connolly.
I thought it was Connolly, and then
it was Connolly. Sarri played a great ball over the top. Connolly's through. He's a Republic of Ireland, played in the Premier League for Brighton. He's a good little player, demonstrated by the goal that he scored. But fantastic tackle by Zach. But that's what Zach's good at. Mm. And if you were to play, what Zach gives you in the centre is it gives you a bit of pace there, in the way in which you played Dickie and Naismith there.
No pace.
And, you know, there was a goal at Swansea, wasn't there, when the guy just outpaced Naismith in a similar type of situation. And,
their equaliser came on the half hour, so we only held the lead for about 8 minutes. Scott Twine, a player that Liam Manning had at MK Dons, puts the ball in to Connolly's path. And Dickie didn't seem to close him down. And picking up what Ian said earlier about players that were sick, I thought Dickie did some good passing, but he did look a little bit laborious. And he stood off Connolly, and it was a cracking goal. You couldn't blame Matt.
I mean, going to Twine, I thought Tanner was very, very good last night.
Hmm?
But, you know, again, just like the Sunderland game, I feel really bad because Tanner, for me, I'm half expecting a right back nowadays to be doing more than a right back do, you know, he's inverted, he's doubling up or whatever. But Tanner does what Tanner does quite well. I mean, there was some crosses to the back post as well when he was defending well, and he played Twine in the same way that he played well against Jack Clark at the weekend, he played well against Scott Twine last night, in my view.
Yeah.
But on the goal, yeah, he took it well. He brought it in. Very similar to Mometi's one.
Yeah, it was.
In a way.
Yeah. Well, you know, in a way, the five goals came from that.
Yeah, he came a long way, actually. Mm. He was allowed to travel a long way across it. And he just gave him a little bit. He stood off him, potentially.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a huge amount of room. He shifted it well, Conor.
Yeah.
He shifted it well. And he got the power.
Yeah.
And I think it was the power.
And it's interesting you say about the power, because when you see the goal from behind the goal, TGH sort of turned his back on it a little bit as well. Which you got to put...
I think coming across, I think Max was unsighted.
Yeah.
With the ball coming across, with the guy running across and so many bodies in front of him. And it was, you know, at the time, I just thought, you know what, that is a good goal.
Yeah, good goal. Sometimes you've got to give the opposition.
Sometimes you describe
it. Ian, your thoughts on the goal? I've been slightly critical of Dickey there. And again, picking up on the comments of people that were sat around me, we seem susceptible to balls over the top. There were a few one-on-one situations, or the defence seemed a bit open, and there were fingers being pointed by people sitting around me about Zach. There, I thought him and Dickey had a good game overall. But your thoughts on the goal and that sort of being exposed a couple of times in the centre at the back?
Well, if you play higher line at the back and you don't sit in and play a low block or even a medium block at times when you're attacking, you're susceptible to an accurate pass over the top. And Hull weren't lumping it. They were accurate passes. And they were weighted perfectly, which is another pet hate of mine. The weighting of some of our passes, even over short distance, is poor. So on the goal, Rob Dickey didn't get close enough. But the other thing that happened, and it's happened a lot, is a covering midfielder doesn't get in front of the guy when he's cutting in from the right or left to shoot. And there are various examples last season, the Burnley game that happened, that Alex Scott didn't get in front of him. I thought Matty James could have got closer to Connolly last night in that situation. And Rob Dickey gave him a yard. And he is a good footballer. And you can't give a good footballer a yard on the edge of the box. And the higher you go up the pyramid, that yard becomes you can't give him half a yard. Mm. So I would say that was it a stoppable goal? I suppose all goals are preventable to some degree. But yeah, I think that was a preventable goal. And it's a shame because we were on top at the time.
Mm.
And then they came back and got, I'll describe it as the luckiest penalty I've ever seen. But I've looked at it half a dozen times and I genuinely can't see any contact with Pring. He might have just brushed against the guy. But God, if you're going to give them, you're going to be giving six or seven penalties a game.
Yeah.
It stopped our flow at the time, stopped our momentum, which was a great shame. But no, I thought Rob Dickey had a 6 out of 10, 6.5 out of 10 game last night, where I'd normally give him an 8. So because he gave the ball away in key areas a few times. So did Jason Knight, but that everybody's lauded. Yeah.
And we don't know who had the sickness.
If you're going to try and play this more progressive in-possession style, that's going to happen. And in all fairness, though, we didn't dominate possession last night. They had more possession than we did.
Yeah.
But I don't Hull, to an extent, I know it was a good comeback, but to an extent, they played into our hands a little bit in the second half because they seemed to be wanting to hold on to the lead more than extend it.
Yeah.
And they didn't really start coming back at us until we'd gone ahead.
By that time,
it was a bit late, but it was still a little bit harem scarum at the end, wasn't it?
Just a little. Ben, since Ian mentioned it, we jumped to the goal that put Hull in front at half time, and we didn't really clear our lines. I mean, it was Tanner, Knight, and Sykes sort of over on that far side. I'm watching it from the lower Lansdowne. Tanner fouls Tufan. I don't know whether that's what he got a book.
Yeah,
it was Tanner fouled Tufan.
He took the ball. He overextended. He took the ball, And then the ref called him for taking the man after he took the ball. Yeah. So it was a bit of a...
That was a bit harsh.
It was a bit harsh. Yeah. And then booked him for it as well. And he must have thought he's taken, clean tackle, but then he's thinking that Toufan must have been able to get on the ball after the tackle, and then he took Toufan out.
So but anyway, the build-up part, I mean, Ben, what a soft penalty that was. He didn't even bloody appeal for it, did they?
No, I think, well, two things. The equaliser was a good whip on that ball. I was sat behind it in the side stand, and it was a nice curve on the ball, much more than the Metti strike later. But yeah, the penalty was mind-boggling. I wasn't sure it was even given, because no one really appealed, and their fans were quite quiet. And then I watched it at halftime on various feeds that were shared with me, and you could just about see Pring's got his right hand on the lower back of the whole player, and that's it. And that's it. It's an incidental. It's not a push. It's not a movement out. It's literally just contact, like you're walking by someone in a supermarket. And if they're given, then that, you know, that referee needs a strong looking at, because that was absolutely appalling without any rationale or reason given. And I think that we've got to be cautious here, because we all talk about VAR in the Premier League, and are we going to get VAR in the Championship? What's it going to be like for us? But, you know, we can't have games running on for hours when we're reviewing those sort of decisions. So,
What did you think of the referee? Your namesake, Ben. He was Ben Toner. His first appearance at Ashton Gate, I read somewhere, since we beat Hull 5-0 the last game of the season before last, apparently. But, you know, there was one incident, it might have been in the first half, where one of our players went down and he didn't even see it. And then the crowd shouted, and then he called play back. The referees, the standard is, well, we talk about this every week, but this is your first week on, Ben. The referees' standard is appalling. Yeah. Almost week in, week out.
Yeah. I think it's easy to point fingers but generally speaking, I think the standard is lower than we would expect. I think the pressure of VAR in the Premier League is having an impact on refereeing across the professional game. And you can see that. And the fact we can't get grassroots refs anymore for lots of other reasons that are not to do with VAR. So I was surprised again, but I don't know enough about how these guys are assessed and what the follow-up is, because there's got to be a follow-up to that yesterday, because the referee needs to be able to explain in some forum what he gave that decision for. Because I've watched football for a number of years, we all love the game, but it's got to be some sense to it, otherwise we all go away filling in the blanks too much and creating more anxiety where, in my view, is not required.
And perish the thought of having VAR at Championship level with second rate referees and a system that doesn't really work, you know.
I've got a take on that, Ben. Go on. You want to hear the take on that?
Go on.
So, everybody thinks it's a Pring push. Mm. But actually, from the Dolman, you saw the ref, and people in the South Stand have said on various social media that he was telling the players about pushing and shoving beforehand. So, he was having a conversation, so he said that. And if you look at it, there is a slight tug by Dickey.
Is it?
On one of their players coming through. And just if you rewind it back, the ref's got his whistle in his mouth on the tug by Dickey rather than the...
Well, the simple thing for the referee there, though.
So whether the fact is that nobody knows. And if we're all sitting here the next day and Manning was asked, I think, on Radio Bristol, as the ref said to you why he gave the penalty, he's like, well, no.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The referee, if the referee said, I gave the penalty for this, because afterwards, didn't Vine, is that when Viner got his booking?
Yeah, he got just for dissent after the thing's been taken. But you're just there thinking, at some stage, the ref is going to have to put a report in or something like that says, I gave this penalty for. And here we are the day afterwards, and it's still absolutely no clearer whether there's a tug by, a pullback by Dickey, however slight, or the Pring one, because Pring falls over after the guy falls over. So it's not Pring falling over on the guy that actually caused it. So whether it's the Dickey pull, which is more in front.
I'll have a look at that again for the Dickey pull.
If it's a mistake, you'll get a letter of apology. And I mean, I think at one point this season, we had seven or eight
Did they have to say in their report why they gave the penalty?
No, but their decisions...
I gave it for a dicky pull, or I gave it for a push by Prim, or...
The honest answer is I don't know. I know they have to say why they gave people yellow cards. You know, for example, It was dissent, serious foul play, whatever. I thought George Tanner was completely unlucky because he did play the ball.
Yeah, you're right.
But then the referee said, well, you caught him with your follow-through. But, I mean, at the point he's made that tackle, his feet weren't high. He wasn't out of control. And, I mean, George Tanner can't disappear once he's made the tackle. He's sliding along at God knows what speed. He's got the ball. I think he got it with his left foot and pushed the ball away. And then Tufan went over his leg. Now, if you, once again, I'll come back to it. If you're going to give free kicks and yellow cards for that, you're going to finish up playing five a side. Because, I know the difference between, oh, well, you know, this thing about, well, you caught him with his follow through. Sometimes players get the ball and then it's their other leg that smashes the bloke up in the air. Now, you can't do that. But I thought that it was unlucky. And as I said, I watched the Pring one and I watched it before. And apart from the usual bumping and boring that goes on in the penalty area, I couldn't see anything that merited a penalty. Certainly, VAR, perhaps if the referee hits a hop, you need VAR more in the Championship than you do in the Premier League. I think the referee, that one where the referee didn't see it and went back and booked somebody, that was a Sunderland game, and it was Tommy Conway. But what might have happened is they're all mic'd up and the linesman might have seen it. So, I don't know. It looked to me like Tommy just accidentally fell into the bloke, or they fell into each other. But like I said, I was following the ball, so I wasn't really watching.
Okay, let's move on, because we've got plenty to talk about today. Ben, the substitutions, Neil said earlier, wondered when they were going to happen. It was on the 74th minute, and it was Conway, James and Sykes going off. Morale boosting for Mometi not to be pulled off. Yeah, and then on come Bell, Williams and Naki. Your thoughts on the subs and the timing, and then he got the goal, didn't he, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see Naki back on the pitch. You know, bit of energy, put a challenge in as well when he came on. Again, back to Ian's point at the start of this pod around the effort that were being put in. They were quite late subs compared to what we've had previously. And Mometi, I think we all thought he might go. He's faded second half in the last couple of games for lots of reasons. We don't know necessarily all those reasons for that. And it was good to see. I think that Manning's put a lot of faith in Mometi behind the scenes and in his post-match press conferences as well. And I think he's going to pay. I think he will be boosted by that because of the psychology that anyone in any job or industry, you know, you get told you're doing all right, you tend to do better, you know, rather than the negative side of you're not making the 18 or the 16 or you're getting nowhere near it or you're getting pulled off at half time. So it was good for that point of view. I think Sam Bell did okay, looked quite lively. And as Jane, we already discussed Joe Williams's contribution. Again, tidy player, just not fit for long enough. And we've not seen him a fit Joe Williams in our time at our club for long enough. So, you know, I'm not sure what else he could have done because I know that Nige played some of the younger lads a bit sooner than Liam likes to play them. And maybe that's because he's developing in a different way. So I thought they were positive, you know.
Interesting points. Mometi's first goal in, I think it's 23 games. And it was a Dicky Pring, Mometi combination down the left. That, you know, we're looking good in... Do you think we're more threatening down the left or down the right? Because Sykes gets his praise and Tanner, but down the left, and Dicky walks out Adam Webster style, doesn't he? Yeah.
There are some comparisons with Dicky, aren't there? I mean, what a fantastic signing for 700,000 Dicky is.
Yeah.
Fantastic. But Tanner is a defender, isn't he? He's like a 1980s right back.
I was going to say 1960s like, right back. He comes from up north, you know, and he's got big clogger boots.
Yeah,
on.
He's just like, he's a bit of a throwback, and he's just like one of those, when a right back was, when a full back was just a defender that couldn't do centre backs, so he used to stick him right back or something, wasn't it? But they were just defender, and that's all that they were expected to do. Nowadays, you expect more, and I think eventually, well, we'll see where it goes with Tanner, because defensively, I think, Manning trusts him defensively. And you know, when Pring goes on one of his runs, you know, you look back and Tanner is always on the cover.
Yeah.
He's always on the cover. So that's his mentality. I don't think Pring has been particularly great to start this.
We're halfway through the season.
I don't think he's been great. First half last night was given a torrid time by Delap.
Yeah.
Again, you know, he's had Roberts at the weekend, who gave him a bit of a torrid time as well. So I don't think he's been great. Behind Mometi, Mometi is just head in that cloud sometimes, isn't he? You know, literally, I can only imagine what it would be like playing behind Mometi or playing in front of Mometi, because you're never entirely sure whether he's going to do his Irish dancing jig in the middle of the park.
And if you're listening to it, you can't see it. No. If you're watching it, you still can't see it because he was doing it under the table.
But he's got to be an incredibly frustrating player to play with, because you're just like, what is he going to do? But then theoretically, the defenders are going to think, what is he going to do?
Exactly. Right?
That's the maverick
positive.
Mometi is... Mometi,
he's a maverick. He's mercurial.
Well, there's a lot of things he doesn't do particularly well.
All right.
And one of those is the defensive element of the game.
Ben, you said about he'd faded. Yeah, I'll come to you in a second. Ben, I'm going to come to you about the winning goal. Ben, you said he faded in the second half, and he did to some extent against Sunderland. I think he got taken off against Sunderland. Mm. You said on that near side, because you watched the game, the Sunderland game, sat just in front of me on the Lansdowne.
Yeah.
And you talked about Mometi being micromanaged by...
Manning was in his ear.
Manning, do this, do that. Da, 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 da. And it was noticeable. I think it was Mometi that came off Wyman in injury time, wasn't it?
Mm.
And the embrace was there. Yeah. I think Manning sees Mometi as a project, because as been said by Ian or one of you, you know, he's a player that had Manning still been at Oxford. That's the sort of club that he might have gone to on loan.
Well, Manning said he was agreed for him to go on loan in January.
Oh, from us. Okay, there you go. Ian, you put your hand up there and take us through the night goal. Because they had a change of goalkeeper just before that when he injured himself.
Can I just clarify a couple of things that people have asked? On Taylor Gardner-Hickman, the deal's done. And we will sign him at the end of the season. So West Brom can't recall him. They can't back out of it. It's all done and it's in writing. My thought about on him, as you gave him a mention, my only thought is he going to be, as he's a loan player officially, are West Brom going to give us permission to play him against West Ham? That'd be an interesting one. But on George Tanner, who's been mentioned, I really like defenders who can defend. And a lot of modern defenders can't. They haven't got the ability to stop players. And we're coming up against some really good wide players in that division. You look at the two Sunderland lad, Roberts and Clark. I mean, they walk in our team. So, you know, and he's up against them. And so's Cam Pring. You know, you're at that level. George Tanner, I mean, I remember when he played, he was a guy that, Brereton Diaz at Blackburn, he was up against. Marked him out of the game. So he's a good defender. And unless you play like Tottenham, and I'd love to see it, but under Ange, but where the fullbacks are up in front of the centre forward and in the middle of the pitch, he'll do for me. And I mean, it couldn't have been any good for the kid's confidence that all the time he was here, we were trying to replace him. We tried to replace him with Kane Wilson. How did that go? And we
Mark Sykes has played there. He's seen off three of them.
Ross McCrory was bought to replace him when Pearson was asked, where's his best position? Oh, playing right back. George Tanner must have thought, great, Smashing. Thanks a lot, Gaffer. Going back to the goal, Knight's come in, hit the shot. I think the keeper had probably had it covered, but it did get a significant deflection and he didn't get a strong enough hand on it. Should he have stopped it? Probably. And if he'd have been on the field and had his bearings and all the rest of it, but he'd only just come on as a sub, and good for us, we put him under some pressure.
We did.
And coming back to Anis, like I said it earlier on, on the last podcast, if you're picking your wide players, your attacking wide players on the basis of their defensive work, then you're starting in the wrong place, because I don't think Roberts and Clark for Sunderland or the two Hull lads last night were absolutely brilliant defensively.
No.
You know, Delap, was he great defensively?
The point I'd make here is that if you're going to have Anis on the pitch, he's got to perform like he did last night, because if he doesn't, then he's a liability on the left-hand side. Defensively, if you're not going to get anything from him and his link-up play isn't great, you know, we saw that in the Sunderland game when he burst through and then he didn't go on his own and tried to pass it to Tommy. So if you don't get that from Anis, then what do you get from Anis? So it's kind of... the jury's still out for me, because he's still playing a little bit like a League One player who 2 years ago was in non-league. And his reading of the game and understanding of the game. But when he's at his best and when he's at his strengths, if we can build on his strengths, develop his strengths, then, you know, we might have half a player on the left-hand side. But he's still frustrating, inconsistent, difficult to play with. But he's different to what we have.
But just to say there on that, you're saying about that, and Sam Bell, you know, in recent games, I know he's scored four goals in one, but Sam, those things apply to him, because he's been out of the game, he's been out of some games for long periods and not offering that much.
Well, you've got Sam Bell, who under Pearson was playing left wing or left side, now he's playing right wing back.
Yeah.
You know, late on in games, the last two games, we've been having playing right wing back.
Yeah.
And that is, defensively, he's not great, Bell, but, you know, we're playing the other side of the pitch in a defensive position.
I want to talk about the winning goal with Ben. It was interesting that the change of goalkeeper came because Mometi did cut in again, put in a shot that the keeper went down, injured himself. And the first thing that Matt Ingram did was kick the ball straight out to Naki Wells, and we weren't able to capitalise on that. That wasn't a particularly bad play, but take us through the goal and, you know, eulogise over Jason Knight. I'm finally calling him Jason Knight, not Leon Knight. I'm managing to get the Christian name right. But, take us through that goal.
Well, praise indeed. I mean, I'm not sure I can eulogise David, but I'll do my best. I think that... To be behind in the game, we obviously got back into it. There was quite a lot of energy. We've not seen it at Ashton Gate for a long time, where we've got the energy behind and we're kind of looking at, we're not all going, we're going to lose 4-3 or all that kind of stuff goes on. And it was just good energy and it was a decent finish. I mean, I think back to Mometi, I know it's slightly regressing, but what Mick Manning's done was, in my view, the obvious thing of you got a new team, talk them up, right? Talk the players up and give them an opportunity. The challenge will become when it's 15, 20 games in and they're not being taken, because then you get into you're either in with me or out with me. So Mometi has not yet been through that testing period yet of, is he truly going to be somebody that we can fit into our system? And also, he's not a player that was signed by Liam Manning, but nor was Jason Knight. And therefore, but he's got energy and legs. And, you know, I think his finishing goals, we were always told that he was going to be a finisher. We've not really seen it in our club yet. But he came through last night and slotted one. So, you know, fair play to him.
He did well. And it was interesting, Neil, that whereas I said for their goal that I think Connolly cut in, I thought, was it Cyrus Christie? He did stand off him a little bit. And was he a player that we were linked with defensively?
He's always been a name out there. Cyrus Christie over the years, but I can't remember that's been linked.
He gave him a bit too much space like Dickie did. And then it took a wicked deflection off of Alfie Jones, which this has been well documented. He's a player that was brought up in Backwell, not Million Mile. You say Long Ashton, I read Backwell. We're not going to argue over 4 miles.
He was a North Somerset lad. A lot of the players that I've got, Dan Clevedon United, when I'm director of football down at Clevedon United, and a lot of the lads played with him in North Somerset Academy.
Did they?
With Alfie Jones. And he went to the Southampton Academy and then went out from there or whatever, didn't make it to Southampton.
But you say he's Long Ashton.
Long Ashton.
Not Backwell, because I've read Backwell, which is why I said it.
We digress.
Does it matter?
It's 4 miles of the A370 that we're arguing about.
Maybe he went to Backwell school.
Ben has said here, it actually felt like we had 20,000 were there for once. The change in atmosphere was night and day. The fans loved the players giving it their all. I mean, it was a good crowd, and it wasn't a bad atmosphere last night at all, really, was it? And everybody went home happy to drink up the cider when the referee blew after 7 minutes of bloody injury time. Ian?
They will be lucky it weren't more, really, because their keeper was down for a while, wasn't he, before he went off?
I
think it's if the team, I alluded it to it earlier on when saying that a lot of people down there get as excited about the tackle as they do about a goal almost. If the team is doing it and they're having a real go, and there was a few moans and groans when we weren't penetrating them, but once we got on that, really started to dominate them. And because I think Hull are a really good side in midfield and going forward. I don't think they're the best team in the league defensively, and we exposed that last night. And even without very many away fans there. And that, I mean, if they'd have brought the same number as Sunderland, the crowd last night would have been pushing 23.
Yeah, it was 517 there last night from
So out of 20,800 and some odd. So yeah. if we go on playing like that, and like I say, it was entertaining and frustrating in equal measure. But if you look at us at home, we've won three. The teams that we've beaten were sixth. Borough were sixth when we beat them. They're 14th now, but they're only two points behind us. The Norwich game, we should have won as well, but we didn't. So I would say we're starting to get it right home. It's not perfect by long, but it won't be, because he hasn't brought in any of what you could call his players.
And the window, and we've got to see this in the next 4 weeks, because the window opens. Yeah, I mean, we won six home games, and as somebody said on Radio Bristol last night, we're on course to hit double figures for the first time of 2017-18 season, which right on cue takes me to the next thing I want to discuss. And I'm going to start with you, Ben. Yeah, and I've been thinking about this for a few days, actually. It's 6 years ago this week. We played Manchester United. We were riding high in the division. You know, we were in the top two places and doing very, very well indeed. I think we got 47 points at the halfway stage of the season. In the second half of the season, we only got another 20. But what I was saying, the side that played Manchester United, right? Now, I'm going to just restrict everything we talk about on this topic to starting 11. Never mind the squad. Right, starting 11, and for the team, I want to do a comparison between the team that beat Man United and what we've got now with everybody fit. Now, of the players that are injured right now, the three that I think are pivotal, although only one of them gets in, and you're going to think it's strange why I've picked him, but the three pivotal players who are injured at the moment are Atkinson, Naismith and McCrory. All right, so I'll state that now. That team that played Manchester United, and again, this is how it lines up on formation on BBC or something like that, but it was Luke Steele in goal, okay, ahead of Frankie, because I think he was injured. Then the back four that night was Bailey Wright, Aidan Flint, Nathan Baker, Orna Magnusson. In the middle, Josh Brownhill, Marlon Pack, Corey Smith, Joe Bryan. In the hole, Pato, who scored two goals for Swansea last night, home against Preston. And in front of Pato, Bobby Di Cordova Reid, or Bobby Reid as he was when he was with us. So that's like a 4-4-1-1. All right. So, Ben, what, taking a 4-4-1-1, what's your back four, assuming everybody's fit? Who makes it from the current team ahead of who was in that team against Man United?
So, looking at the combination, I'd stick Tanner at right back instead of Bailey Wright. I would keep Flint and Baker. I say that because Baker's injury record means I'm a bit tainted, but a fit Aidan Flint and a mobile Baker. And I would probably go, well, I'd have put Joe Bryan left back, but that's because I know it's not possible in this formation.
Yeah.
These players. But I would probably, but all things considered, I would go Pring over okay. at Magnussen at left back.
Okay. Ian, same question to you. Yeah? Back four.
It's not in goal. I'd have Steele in goal on the basis of what he's done since he's been playing for Brighton. I'd have McCrory on what I've seen him do for Aberdeen.
Wrong Steele.
Sorry?
It's wrong Steele.
Wrong Steele, is it?
Yeah. That's Jason Steele.
Okay. Right. All right then. Well, in that case, yeah, go on, give Max a game. I've seen him do for Aberdeen, I'd say McCrory at right back.
Yeah.
I'd have Joe Bryan at left back.
You can't, because Joe's in the midfield. You can't. You're doing direct comparison. Left back on against Man United was Orde Magnussen.
I'd have Cam in then.
Okay. All right, Neil, your thoughts on the back four?
Back four, I'd have Tanner over Bailey Wright, simply because you know that Man United are going to have the possession on it. So you want your best defender. For the points that Ian's outlined on Tanner, you want your best defender at right back. So I'd have Tanner over Wright at right back. Flint, Dickey, there's not a lot of pace there, is there? I'd probably have Baker there. I'd agree with
would you?
With Ben. Yeah, I think so. I think you can't have too slow. I mean, Flint, bless him, but he had the turning circle of the Titanic, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, when it was a small mobile forward, so you can't.
And Dickie's
all right, but Baker was a defender, wasn't he?
Mm.
He was a Rolls Royce of a defender in the Premier League for a long time until injuries.
And at left back, Magnussen or Pring?
Magnussen. How we got our money back for Magnussen is beyond me. But
anyway. Well, we got Mark Ashton to thank for that. He did marvellous work on the transfer.
But there was always a catastrophic mistake by Magnussen on the horizon, wasn't there?
He flunked it against Man City, if I recall. The first goal, and fell over.
And Cardiff, he used to try and let the ball go out of play.
All right, okay, so we're agreed.
Bring it left back.
Okay, I'm agreeing with Ian. Never seen him play, but right back, my right back is Ross McCrory. I've not seen a bloke play.
How can you say that?
Because he played for Aberdeen, for goodness sake.
But that's Aberdeen. You can't put him in the City team.
Well, he's in there. I was going for Flint and a Dickey combination, but Neil's shot that apart because it's like having two bloody oil tankers
the
in
ball
there.
Over the top.
And I was going for Pring over Magnussen. Yeah. So, you know, I think what wins it is of Max in goal. So the consensus is we're split on right back and no place for Zach Viner in that, which is interesting because he's been one of our better players. Right, this is where it starts to get interesting now, in the middle four. That night, Josh Brownhill, Marlon Pack, Corey Smith, and Joe Bryan. Okay, we all remember how Joe Bryan cut in from the left and scored that belter of a goal past, I can't remember the United, De Gea. Was De Gea in goal for
them? No, it was, what's his name? The useless one that all came right. in for cup games.
All right. Anyway.
Carlos.
Fabianski? No.
No.
Right, you work that one out, Neil. Right, Ben. Brownhill, Pack, Smith, Bryan. Who's going to crack in there?
Well, first of all, it was Romero in goal for Man United that night.
Thank you.
There you go.
Right. So anyone who knows me in the South Stand knows that I loved Marlon Pack, right? I thought he was the most underrated midfielder we'd had for a long time. So I've got to put the team around Marlon Pack in that midfield. And I'll take all the heat you want to give me, but Marlon Pack in his time, So I'd stick him in the middle. And the rest of it, I'm really not sure. I think Brownhill would probably still get in, and I'm not tainted by what he's done since he left us. Obviously, he's gone on and he's done well.
And he did used to play wide on the right a bit, didn't he?
Yeah. So I want to get Knight in there, you know, the current.
Well, yeah, you get a chance to get Knight in. Josh Jones on the text feed has said where, right? Okay. So
yeah,
the rest of the midfield.
Yeah, I want to. So yeah, but I'm going to stick Knight in midfield, actually, alongside Pat. And then left side. Well, if I can't have it at fullback, then I would probably still go with that Joe Bryan. Then, not the Joe Bryan we've seen in the last couple of years.
Okay. So, what's your? Just give me your four again, then. So Brownhill gets it. Pat.
Yeah.
Knight and Bryan. Brownhill, Pat, Knight and Bryan. Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Ian, you next. Oh, Ian's just done a private chat there. Right. So read it out, Ian, because I got my glasses on.
My team would be O'Leary, McCrory, Viner, Baker, Pring. From right to left, Sykes, Brownhill, Pat, Bryan. In the hole, Knight, and up front, Bobby Reid.
All right. That's you done. Neil, it's pretty much what I agree with. Neil, midfield.
Midfield, I've got to get Knight in. I think he's a dynamo in the middle. I think TGH, potentially later on in the season, let's see how he goes. He's improving every game. But I go Brownhill, probably the Pats. I'm tainted by Smith, obviously, scoring, so I've got the...
Brian,
I think, on the left brings a little bit more than Mometi on the left. I think
Mometi or Bell or Brian in that wide left.
Would have played. So I go Brownhill, probably I take Brownhill, Knight, Smith, Brian. Sorry, Ben. I know you love Pack, but I can't have Pack and Smith there and avoid Knight.
All right. But bearing in mind it's a 4-1-4-4-1-1, and Ian's pretty much picked. I pretty much agree with what Ian's got there because he's got Knight and Reid up Knight in the hole and Bobby Reid up front. I mean, if you're putting both of you, I'll go to you, Ben. If you're putting Knight in the middle, then who plays in that 1-1 role? Who's your front two in that setup?
Well,
would you just agree with Ian? You can't.
Well, no, I think anyone can simply agree with Ian. That life would be too boring. And please don't apologise, Neil. Football's about opinions. If we had the same view, then we would be a different world, and it'd be a boring.
Can I just say, Ben, I've never got over Pat trying to do a Cruyff turn in the right hand corner against Wolves, losing the ball, conceding the free kick, and then they equalise, and then Barry Douglas and.
The rest is history, because it's all gone tits up.
And then we went tits up from that. So again, I'm a bit tainted on Pack because he does a cross turn in the 93rd minute in the right in the corner.
Well, and I would agree with that, Neil. I would say that we didn't replace the Marlon Pack type player for a good few years after he left, and we spent a long time trying to replace him, and we didn't do it successfully. All right. So from that point of view, that's where I would stick my hat on that point, but. I would play Bobby Reid off of a player, and I'd probably, despite the earlier comments, go for a Conway-type figure. I think Reid and Conway could learn lots from each other, probably Conway learning more from Reid.
Okay, here's a quick one, yes-no answer from all three of you, right? I think he's languishing in Segunda B. Would Famara Deju be... a good play. It's not going to happen, right? But put Famara Deju in the side we've got now, would that be a good addition? You first, Neil. Strict yes or no answer?
No.
No. Ian?
It depends who else is available, Dave. I think he's different from what we've got. I don't think he's a classic back-to-goal striker. I mean, Christian Honor was famous for saying, he called him Mr. Trampoline Touch, which I think was a bit unkind. But I think Fam could possibly do a job, even if coming on for the last 15-20 minutes to rough the centre halves up and stuff like that. And he scored goals for us. So, yeah, I mean, if no one else is available, and you know, when I hear
it's interesting. This has prompted a load of comments here, and it shows the difference of opinion. I mean, Matt Moore, I think he's agreeing to this. He says 100% yes. And then Bob Taylor says, Famara was the cause of many of our problems. Yeah, I mean, he didn't cost us $5 million and walk out for nothing, but he was good at defending from corners. Ben, your view on that one?
Well, I think it's a slightly nostalgic point, really. I think Famara is better since he left us than when he was playing for us. I think we look back. I don't think he fits into our current team in a way which we're trying to set up with our midfield energy, particularly. He might get in a squad, but I wouldn't pick him in a starting 11 based on how we're playing.
All right. Okay, next point. And, you know, Ian and I were there. It's one of the top topics on OTIB. Senior Eds today, guest John Lansdowne. Now, this is what I'm going to say about this. I was there and Ian was there. Ian and I weren't sat together. I was sat next to a mate of mine. And I said, we're moaning about the questions, but neither of us are saying any, right? And we weren't, you know, we just sat there and watched what was a bit of a car crash, basically. Ian, right? I thought you asked the very first question, right? And for you, I thought you'd have had a better question than that. And I'm going to let you talk about, you had a little word with John Lansdowne after, and that is genuine. Those of you who are listening, that's not bullshit. Your first question, Ian, was when are the accounts going to come out? And you've extended the accounts. And if you'd have been sat there together, and we do normally sit together, I'd have said they've only extended them by 1 month, which means that instead of going to the end of May, they go to the end of June. And the Alex Scott transfer didn't happen till August, so they'd have had to have extended it 4 months to the end of August to bring the Alex Scott transfer into the financial results for the year ending 2023. But it was a shit show of a, and that is not because of John Lansdowne. In fact, I felt sorry for John Lansdowne. The question should have been prepared, but when you get people sat there saying, yeah, John, why is it like at half time when they're reading out the half time scores, you play the music in the background?
Sounds like or, a senior Reds meeting.
But there we go. Ian, because you were sympathetic, as I've just been there with John Lansdowne, but your talk on it, and I know you don't read OTIB, but the pile-on of criticism and then criticism of Brian Tinian.
From who?
Ian, take the floor. Just give me your thoughts on that. And what you said to John.
Who's the pile-on from, Dave? Was it from people that were at the senior Reds?
There was obviously people who were there who were able to make certain comments, but then there was a whole pile on from people that weren't there but were just interpreting some of the comments.
That tells you everything you need to know. It's like me going up and giving you half an hour on fly fishing and hang gliding. I don't know anything about it. I thought John did okay. Look, with John, he's not his dad. His dad is a multi-billionaire, very assured, very confident, and quite used to public speaking, being in charge, and that isn't what John is. So if you're waiting for John to be Steve, you're going to wait a real long time. John wants to work in the background, and he's got people who are what was always referred to in companies that I've been with as subject matter experts. So if you want to talk about recruitment, how all that works, you get older, or the academy, you get older Brian Tinian. And if you want to talk about the finances, you get hold of the group now CEO, but he was CFO. About the finances. My question was, when are the accounts coming out? Because if you remember the previous month, Gavin Marshall said they'll be coming out soon.
Yeah.
I agree on some of the questions were downright embarrassing. Not the answers, the questions. If people, as one questioner said, dislike the board, and I don't know how widespread that feeling is. It's certainly not widespread amongst people I know. But if they do, then they need to give us the then what. what happens if Steve Lansdowne wakes up tomorrow morning and says, well, I've been reading all this drivel. I'm off. Bye, lads. Then what?
Yeah, but that's, but we know.
If you can't answer those, no, but if you can't answer those questions, shut up about it.
Yeah.
Because you're raising a question that something that, I mean, I'd hate it to happen. And John's going to run the club. John's the main man down there now in terms of the family, right? Steve's taking a more of a backseat. Steve will still be involved in major decisions, but he's not getting involved. The bloke's 71 years old. Let him enjoy his wealth and his life.
Yeah.
You know, he's still sticking a ton of money into this club.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point you make there, because Bob Taylor just said, how is he just going to say, I'm off? I mean, the fact of the matter is, the club is losing money and somebody has to write out a cheque from a purely cash flow perspective to pay the wages every month. If you're losing probably conservatively now 10 million a year, right? And he can just walk away and leave everything, still want his money back by asking a stupid amount of money for the club, because the 200 million that's been mentioned, we won't get anybody interested in buying it. And by it, I mean the whole thing, lock, stock and barrel. It's got to be
Dave, you were at, you, million, Dave, no, million. Dave, hang on, mate. You were at the meeting when Steve Lansdowne said there are various options open, so you could just buy the football club and not buy the rugby club. You don't need to buy all of Bristol Sport. There are various options, but no one's come to the table.
No.
And certainly we don't want Steve Lansdowne to say, well, okay, yeah, I'll do this and I'll sell that. And we finish up with somebody like they've got it read in, where there's tennis balls on the pitch every week. The bloke's just been fined and banned as a director or whatever. Or indeed, where West Brom finished up. And I know they're above us in the table, but we've got a really good player from them because of what their previous owner have done. Or I think he's still their current owner. But look, leaving that aside, all this stuff about if the board's disliked, all right, then well, who do you want to replace him with?
Well, and practically that's not going to happen. I mean, it's interesting. I want Ben.
No, but Dave, what I'm saying is, well, you've got people talking about stuff.
Yeah, the person who spoke that, never seen that individual before at Senior Reds, and it probably he was just shooting from the hip there. Go on, Neil.
Before you go to Ben, because I'm conscious with letting Ben have it, can I just ask Ian and Dave here? Did anybody ask at the Senior Reds, John, about the budgets? Because they've set
a budget. I did afterwards.
Right. Yeah. They set a budget, then they sell a player for 25 million and they don't increase the budget. Hence why. On that basis, then,
they've been previously discussed.
Then you'll finish. Ian, you were allowed one question, right? And knowing you as I do, that was not your best question. One of the best questions was, what does good look like for you this season, John? Right. And it was pretty much top 10, which is a bit different to having top 6. But he said that. All right. Need to move on a little bit. I just want Ben. Ben, let's have your say on this, because we've said in the past about selling the football club so they pay Lansdowne a rental to play at the ground. The other thing I wanted to say as well, picking up on what Ian said about stuff at West Brom, and also Steve Lansdowne saying somebody coming in to contribute. This was on Talk Sport this week, not the greatest output media, but somebody was saying Jim Ratcliffe has got 20% of Man United, right? Or 25 if it's gone through, right? The Glazers still own the other 80%. So what power can a minority shareholder have coming in when somebody still owns 80% of it? That's the bit that I don't get. I don't see Steve having a joint investor in the whole thing, because he'll still call all the shots, because he still would have put in the most money. If he hives the football club off and he picks a rental for use of the ground based on what division we're in, that to me, and we said this on the podcast over a year ago, that to me is what I would call the impeccable solution, is that somebody buys the brand Bristol City without any losses, doesn't own a ground, and they can put as much or as little into it as they like. Anyway, that's my bit. Ben, over to you. Your thoughts.
Well, I think it's multi-layered. I think that someone coming in and investing in part of the business, and we've discussed it on other pods in this pod before, I think the club are better off with the Lansdowne family historically and currently. There is no other option on the table. To wish the Lansdownes away, I think, is a Pyrrhic victory, which would quickly unravel. And that's been proven on other clubs that are far more historically successful than we've been, that have unraveled through finances. But my other point on this is that you know, I don't think the club has done enough in recent years to really explain the eye-watering losses that we've encountered over the last 4 or 5 financial years, because we haven't got a lot to show for it. And yes, we all had COVID and we all couldn't sell, but that was the same for the whole football pyramid. Yet our losses relative to other clubs were being very high. And I think that needs to be explained. And that probably explains why the selling of big ticket players has not gone back into the player, because we are being trying to rescue a very risky and unsteady sort of quasi-insolvency, because actually football clubs don't make money in the short term or the medium term. And a lot of clubs never make money. Of course, this whole European Super League this week has come out to try and argue that the football pyramid is going to be better off because we're all going to get money from the top clubs or whatever across Europe. So I think we've got to be really cautious as a club to what we hope for, what we wish for, and to be really, really realistic that at the moment we are doing the best we can. I don't think our squad is particularly strong top 10. I think we're going to get top 10 this year, but I don't think we're a strong top 10 side, and we need to add players because, as on this pod you've discussed ad infinitum, we carry too many injuries too frequently, and it exposes our depth in our squad. And look at the bench in the last 3 or 4 months.
Okay, great speech. That's really good, and getting a different view, not a different view, just a considered view. You know, so I think we're all pretty much on the same page. Okay, gents, we're at the halfway stage of the season. 32 points extrapolates to 64. I've just written down here, to get into the playoffs or have a fighting chance, we need another 40 points in the next 23 games, which is 11 wins, 7 draws and 5 defeats. Yeah, that's my take on what it would take. That would take us to 72 points. Yeah, that could well be enough for 5th or 6th. You first, Neil. Can we do that 40 points in the second half of the season?
Can yes we? Or no? Yes, will we? No.
All right.
I think ultimately we don't have the strength in depth. We don't score enough goals. We've gone through a season here now where 26 goals in 23 games. And that is with, you know, 2-3-2 results at home. So you're not going to get in the mix if you don't score enough goals, and we don't score enough goals.
All right. Okay. And transfer activity, because look, if this run continues, if we have a good Christmas, New Year, well, gap is in the last, still 4 points. Yeah. So that's 2 away games and Millwall at home, right?
Yeah.
So if that gap is 4 points, do you think that they would be bolder with cash than if the gap was extended to 7 or more, which it could do?
Well, go back 20 years, when we found ourselves in positions where we need to strengthen as a team and actually go for it, we've always screwed it up. But I think the January transfer window, we did a bit of this in last week, I think the January window is a nightmare to actually work in, because everybody gets pushback. You don't sign players first week in Jan or second week in Jan. They're third, fourth week in Jan, because everyone's looking at the options and there's a limited pool of players. So you're not going to see anything until late Jan.
All right. Ian, 40 points achievable if Atkinson, Naismith and McCrory come back and we don't lose any more injuries. Yeah. Is it achievable? And if no, what do we need to do to make it achievable?
We need to get the injured players back. I've been saying that to the point of being boring, but it's true. And we need the right additions in January.
Okay.
If we do those two things, we should have a new chief medical officer, medical director in place in January. Interviews are going on currently. Then hopefully we can find out what's causing these ongoing injury problems, because they're not Liam Manning's fault. They're not Nigel Pearson's fault. They weren't Dean Holden's fault. It's just something that's endemic in our club, and no one really seems to have the answers. So hopefully this new guy can come in and say, well, hang on a minute. Why don't we do this? Or why don't we stop doing that? And that's why we are where we are with it. We keep hearing this phrase. Yes, could we get 40 points on the basis of, I think it would take about 76 this season, but that's the average it has taken over the previous six or seven. But if we can get those things right, yeah. I mean, it's Neil's quite right when he says we're not scoring goals, and we're particularly not scoring goals and getting results away from home. So that needs, you know, you don't need to be Pep Guardiola to look at it and say, right, okay, well, that's what we need to improve on. And these next two games will really tell us a lot about where we are. And just a comment for on here for some of the comments made by Benny. Yeah, talking a lot of sense, mate. I think, and just to let everyone know, I've agreed with Gavin Marshall that he's going to come on and do the podcast so we can ask him all the financial questions when the accounts come out.
There we go. That'll be interesting. So, Ben, your
well, then that's horse's mouth, isn't it? You can't
get any higher. You spoke with John. You spoke with John as well.
Yeah, and that's John. You know, Gavin Marshall is a subject matter expert in finance.
Yeah.
So he can tell us.
The other thing that John said to you.
To your question, or to Neil's question, why did we lose? Or I can't remember. It might have been Ben who said it. It wasn't me. Who said, why did we lose as badly as we did during COVID when some other clubs didn't? I think that's a very valid question. I think the answer will be Mark Ashton and Lee Johnson. And they were allowed... they were given a degree of latitude and largesse that their bandwidth didn't merit. And you can see from the fact that we discussed this on the last podcast about how good a job they've done at Ipswich, because the guy that runs Ipswich, I don't mean Ashton, I mean is the Alabama pension fund, Arizona pension fund, sorry. He will not give him that kind of dough. Having said that, it is rumoured that the lad they've got who's a left back and he's on loan from Man United is earning $3.5 million a year.
Ben, your thoughts. 40 points achievable. That's only 8 more than we've got. And we've had a change of manager and a change of style. And we've got players coming back from injury.
Yeah, I think all things considered, we will not achieve, sadly, 40 points in the next part of the season. And that's not me wanting that. That's me being reflective and looking at the bits of the machine that are moving. I think Manning will get supported in January, but we know that, as Neil and others have said, that window is not the best market. There will be some pressure, I think, to buy. I think we have had success in stabilising the club's finances and maintaining championship mid-table football. That is something to show for.
Pearson's legacy, would you say, Ben? Just trying to give him some credit?
Possibly. I mean, after Johnson, the Mark Ashton show, the Dean Holden farce, Nigel coming in, it was a difficult role that Nigel played 3.5 years ago to get us in a situation that he walked into. And I think for all of us who love the club, we don't want there to be another post Gary Johnson era, you know, of signing players and falling out of the league back into the third tier for that season, that time in 10 years ago, because that was, you know, that's not that's not going to help anybody in our football club move it forward. So I think there'll be some support. I think we'll finish 9th or 10th, and then we've got the ambition to go again. My problem with that is we had the make progress every year under Gary Johnson and then Lee Johnson, which then faltered away to a very difficult period after those managers left. And we've got to have a plan going forward in the longer term and try and get over the hurdles of the short-termism that football is beset with.
Yeah. Well, no, as I say, it's 6 years ago since the Man United game. We've trod water, gone back. I don't know what the right phrase to use is it, but the key thing is we didn't go back down to the third tier of English football, and that's something to be grateful for. Can we kick on? You know, the top four, that looks done and dusted. Leeds, Ipswich, Leicester and Southampton in no particular order. Whether Ipswich will blow up and have to be content with the playoffs, we'll have to wait and see. By my calculation, if you go down as far as Swansea in 15th, I think there's 10 clubs battling for those final two playoff spots, 5th and 6th. It was vital that we won against Hull, because had we not, they'd have been 10 points ahead of us, you know, in 5th. They're not. They're 4 points ahead. Ben, great to have you on. First time, Ian and Neil. Good to have you here. Just to let everybody know, podcasts we'll be doing post-match ones the day after every game coming up over the Christmas New Year period. So Boxing Day, we'll be doing 9 o'clock on the day after Boxing Day morning.
I'm off to Watford.
He's off to Watford. There we go. And then Birmingham will be on Saturday morning. And then when everybody's back at work, we'll be reporting on the Millwall game, because it is a 3 o'clock kickoff. If it was a lunchtime kickoff, we probably would have done it tea time. I'm on the Watford podcast talking about the game and how I used to throw Hail Trent cakes out of my grandma's flat in Little Cross House, just off Greenway Bush Lane. Don't know how we got onto that subject on the night, but that's scratch your eyes out. I think the Watford podcast, I'll put a link on there. Good bunch of lads on that one. But I'm hoping it's already started off as a happy Christmas. So happy Christmas, Ben, to you. Happy Christmas, Ian. Happy Christmas, Neil. Happy Christmas to everybody that's listened to the podcast this year. 1,200 viewers, listeners a week. If you took the two platforms. Thanks a lot for that. And Merry Christmas, everybody. Say Merry Christmas to the listeners, guys. Merry Christmas. All the best. Cheers now.
Merry Christmas. Take care.
All the best. Bye-bye.
See you later.
As happy as a king when the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robins are bobbing along. When the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. Red, red robins out, bob, bobbing along.